Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traverse of the Stars podcast. How are my loyal listeners? Thank you for your continued support. As always, hit that subscribe button, everybody. We have an amazing show for you because this is part two of the epic interview with David Hewlett. We discuss his upcoming projects, The Swearing Jar and The Cabinet of Curiosities. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. You're in The Swearing Jar, because you talk about that you're doing it with your sister, and you said your wife is doing it as part of it as well.
So my wife was the producer, and she saw this play that Kate wrote, my sister Kate, who played Jeannie in Stargate. She saw this play, she just loved it, absolutely loved it. And she was looking for sort of a film to be her first sort of foray into producing on her own, like her own independent producing thing. And so she said, I want to make this movie. And I was like, well, don't work with Kate. I mean, don't work with family. It's a disaster, especially Kate. So I tried to talk her out of it. As I tried to talk my sister, I also tried to talk Kate out of theater school, by the way. I didn't talk her out of writing. I said she should write. She should stop acting and start writing. Mm. She does write, but I don't know if that's because of me. Kate has not taken my suggestion at all, and it's good on her, because she's like, she made the right decision every time. But so this film came up, and she'd written a script for it, and she'd had a hard time trying to get it made, and then Jane was like, no, I want to make this is it, this is the kind of movie I want to make. And you know, it's this weird kind of mix of like musical and romance and comedy and drama, and it's just this wonderful, it's classic Kate. It's incredibly sort of, you know, all over the place. And just like, it's like that Kate's got just so much bloody talent. You can't, you know, it's like, oh, it's not enough. She's written a script. She's got to write freaking music in it as well. And like do really funny lyrics. And anyway, so she's got, so it's a great combination of that. And then of course we brought in Tim Williams, Jane. I say we, because apparently the company's both of ours. But I stay out of it. I keep saying, you should do more YouTube. She's like, yeah, whatever. Tim Williams came in and wrote this beautiful soundtrack. Allie Clemens, Patrick, I forgot his second name now, from Suits. Kathleen Turner.
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh my God, that voice. I can't get over the voice, is amazing. You know, so she put together this amazing thing. And then of course it's the middle of pandemic. So she's trying to make a movie in the middle of a pandemic. So she did not make it easy for herself, but she got this thing made. It's really beautiful. There's a tiny role that I tried to talk them out of making me do. Cause the truth is I will do anything to get out of working. Like I get talked into it, and I always enjoy it. And I always go, oh my God, why didn't I want to do that? I never actually want to do it. I think it's like an anxiety thing or something, or like a fear of commitment. But anyway, so I just did this. I do this tiny, tiny little part in it. I was actually joking that my whole first scene, I think I'm out of focus in the background, you know, because I insisted on wearing this horrendous wig, which they then decided was way too over the top. Anyway, so I was causing chaos. I was doing my best to ruin my sister's film.
My siblings do.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, Kate did a beautiful job on the script. But I just couldn't get over about how much work was involved for Jane. I mean, Jane is involved in every single aspect of that film. I mean, has had to make these horrible, you know, Sophie's Choice decisions on so many different aspects of it. I'm amazed. I am amazed, A, that the movie even got made, but that it's just this beautiful, it's this really beautiful, like funny, these incredibly catchy songs in it. It's just, I'm very happy that I could be a tiny, tiny, I really am a tiny, tiny, tiny part of it. But I feel like a bit like a mascot. You know what I mean? I'm like sort of there. I should really just be in some funny looking suit. But it really is a testament to well, to Jane getting it done. And of course, you know, Kate writing this beautiful, odd little, I think it was originally like a fringe play, you know?
So when you, in your role in the movie, your Bill, do you get to sing in it? Is there a musical part for you?
No, you can't. They won't let me anywhere near singing. I tried to sing to my son. I went in the other morning. He wanted me to wake him up at 9:30. I came in with a guitar and tried, because Kate sort of inspired me somewhat to sort of, I've had this guitar. I got given this guitar years ago and I never played it. I just sort of, I would look at it. I'd walk into the room and look at it and go like, God, curse you guitar. Why can't you play yourself? During the pandemic, I picked it up and I found it incredibly relaxing. And of course I also Jason Momoa is a very talented guitarist now. Well, I'll tell you why, because I had to listen to him freaking practice for 5 years on Stargate, you know, which is just, you know, I feel like I never wanted to hear a guitar again ever. But singing is not in the books. I am a glorified background performer in it. But the performances are just beautiful. I mean, I got to say, one of my favorite performances in it is Kathleen Turner, because she's so funny. Like, she's just, I mean, both in life and in this film, she's both terrifying and lovely. She plays the mother-in-law, but she's just heartbreaking. Like, she does this, she's at one moment, you're just like, oh, what a, you know, and then the next, she'll say something and just tear your heart out. It's just beautiful. And then, I literally did everything I possibly could to make this film not happen. Like, literally anything I could possibly do. I really thought it was a terrible idea. And once again, I was ignored and I've been proven wrong yet again. So you should definitely, you really should get, I mean, you could even do them together or separately, but you should talk to Kate, because it would be fun to listen, I think, to get her perspective on how it progressed, because it is, I don't think people realize just how much work it is getting a film made, even just I don't know what the budget was eventually, but you know, it's like chicken feed compared to like an Avengers movie or something. Mm. And the less money you have, the harder it is to make it, you know, and it's, independent films were everything when I grew up, and now it's very, very difficult. They almost don't exist anymore, you know.
You have my email. I would more than happy to talk to you, both your sister and your wife. I'll put you in touch.
Yeah.
That'd be absolutely awesome.
Also, just for people to understand what a producer does, because as it turns out, it's everything. Literally cleaning toilets at times when necessary. I mean, it's extraordinary. And also, and then Kate's journey as well is, I think, fascinating and inspiring for people as well, because I think it's she's done, I think she originally trained as a teacher as well. I should talk to her sometime.
Yeah, you probably should talk to your sister once in a while.
Should check in with her once in a while. Apparently she had a kid. Yeah.
Damn,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, yeah. Congratulations, uncle. Yeah,
Georgina, cute kid. Oh my God. She's like a Gerber baby. It's like ridiculous. You know, I can't make the kid laugh though. So she's out of my will.
So how rough is it to work with family like that? I mean, was there issues of like your wife and your sister? I mean, there's a fight between the two of them.
Yeah, I ain't winning that one. I ain't winning. The only loser is right here. Right. Yeah, I mean, but again, the nature of any of these things, making a film is, I think, sometimes it's a bit like working in an office. I mean, you're gonna have your heads are gonna bang together every so often, and that definitely happened on this. I mean, it's also really hard to know, again, if you've got someone, you know, the weird thing is like you write something and then you have to just give it to someone else, like, you know what I mean, like you have no power after that. I thought if you wrote it, look, I've written and directed and still been amazed at the fact that you just don't get to make any decisions. I mean, until you're at a certain level of, or maybe unless you're a certain personality type. I mean, I always thought that being an actor would be a wonderful, would be a wonderful experience to have towards directing. Mm. I think it's the absolute opposite of that. It's the worst thing, because I am so used to trying to keep everybody happy. As an actor, you just want to, you know, like, I just want to keep things going and, right, you know, like, dance, monkey, dance, you know, come on, everybody, you know, like, but as a director, you can't do that. You have to have very clear vision. You have to you know, you have to piss people off. And I'm just not good at that. I just don't, you know, I get pissed off, but I'm not good at just saying like, nope, I want this. You know, it's always like, really? Well, if you think that's a good idea, maybe it's a good idea. We should talk about that. Should we do that? You know, like it's a very, very different art. But the idea of handing a script over to someone else and saying like, okay, that's my baby, you go, you know,
right,
really difficult. So of course there's going to be stuff there. And there definitely was where Jane had to say like, you know, look, here's the deal. This, I couldn't do this because it's, you know, these things had to happen in order to make this happen. And, you know, and vice versa, I'm sure. So yeah, it was fascinating. I mean, and then, you know, then you get the director in there as well. Lindsay was the director, who's just, you know, wonderful. Did a beautiful little film called Wet Bum, which is just it's just a lovely little film, like just about sort of bullying and being a young woman in a certain time. It's just again, these little films that, I mean, she's got this her tagline, for want of a better word, for her company is movies by women for women who give a fuck. You know what I mean? And I just love that because I think that just sums up Jane so well. You know what I mean? Like she cares. Like she really. And she loves films, like loves them in a way that I thought I used to. Now I love the internet, but I think I love technology more than I love I love a good film, of course, or a good television show, but I feel like my love of film, a big part of it is because there's so much technology in it. You know what I mean? I love that aspect of film and television.
So, I mean, do you consider doing more tech for films, like doing some of the special effect things or whatever? Something
I'd love considered? To. Yeah, I'd love to. I did a little bit, tiny, tiny little things on another film another film that Jane bullied me into. All About Who You Know, which is really fun, which is this kind of playing this Aaron Sorkin type of disaster who, you know, who's trying to, you sort of try to pull his family together it's an anti-romance romance, if that makes sense. It's almost like it's very sort of meta. It's almost like a romance film talking about writing a romance film, if that makes sense. So there's sort of this meet cutes and all sorts of stuff like that, but it's all done very sort of weirdly self-consciously. It's kind of a fun little film. But that they needed some weather effects and some compositing stuff, very simple compositing stuff that wasn't meant to be, like wipes and things just to help, you know, to help sell a cut and stuff.
Right, right.
And like an idiot, I went like, oh, I'll do that, you know, and then spent a very long time because I am so obsessive, but I would love to do more of it. There's another film. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it or not, but there's a film that I'm a part of that I'm really hoping is going to go in September. And I get to, one of the reasons why I'm so excited about it is I get to be there for all the effects stuff.
Nice.
Like I get to, and the guy who's directing it is an effects. I mean, that's his company does effects. And the technology is extraordinary. I mean, do you know the company Red Giant?
I don't think they
do plugins for Adobe, After Effects. They do all these amazing.
Oh, okay. Unfortunately, I'm not much of a tech nerd.
Oh, really? Do you editing at all? Are you doing any?
Well, I edit this on I think it's something Filmora.
Filmora. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so it's basically just a plug-in for both an editing software and, you know, what do they call it? 2D effects or whatever. So it started off with sort of titles and stuff, but then it's got more and more advanced and that could do 3D stuff and everything, but they would do these short films. And I suggest everyone go and look at them because they're amazing. Some of the best short films I've ever seen, done by a company called Red Giant. They were just promotional films for their effects, but the geniuses behind the company who made these films, they love films. There's extraordinary stuff they were doing. And I literally tweeted them at one point and said, I will act for software. And they took me up on it. They sent me the software. They sent me a software subscription and I went and filmed a couple of their things for them.
That's awesome.
And it was done. I've struck up a great friendship with Aaron there, I don't think Aaron's there anymore, and Seth Worley, who is, I think, just a genius director. One of my favorite films that they did was one called, I'm going to have to look it up because it's It really is worth seeing. I think you'd love it. It's incredibly smart. let me see if I can look it up. All right. Feel free to talk amongst yourselves while I look that up.
no worries. But that is awesome though. Like, are you this CGI work that you're doing, like on the computer? Are you built, or are you able to build like the? You say you're into robotics.
Oh, I love the robotics too. Yeah, that's my problem. Is it's the what is it, the jack of all trades, master of none?
Oh yeah.
That's my. I'm fascinated by everything. The problem is I want to play with everything. So you know.
Now, is this like Robot War type robots?
It's funny. That's it's the first thing that people go to with robots is that when you want to, they go like, you want to teach kids robots, let's have them fight each other. The problem is there's kind of an innate issue there, I find. I'm always looking for other ways because I want them to fight, frankly. That's what I like. I'm all Pacific Rim on this stuff. Like Transformers the crap out of it. I want them to fight. Robot Wars, one of my favorite shows. But, you know, from an educational, inspirational standpoint, you kind of want them not destroying each other. So I try to look for other ways of doing that. One of the ones I played with that we ended up doing a little video of for a company here up in Toronto. We took the robots and we took this Google AI software and we taught it to recognize different fart sounds.
That's cool.
And then so you could, depending on how you farted, would control where the robot went. And that's the kind of stuff that I try to play with, because I feel like, you know, appeal to the child and myself, I feel that it might appeal to the kids as well. I mean, this is sometimes a few groans and, you know, bad dad jokes and things, but yeah, that's it's more about just trying to, I think robots are incredible. I think what I forget and I think we forget is that the kids grew up with these things. There's no big deal. They've had toy robots. There's no, you know what I mean? Like, these may be magic to me, but to them, it's like, yeah, whatever. Great. Yeah, it's a robot, whatever. It's a remote control. It doesn't matter. So it's kind of just trying to come up with different ways of them to use it. Like, like a brain computer interfaces, like, you know, can you use your brain to control the computer? I mean, we looked into building a lie detector test because I was working on this Guillermo movie and I was running this old school lie detector test on Bradley Cooper of all people. So there you are, I'm, you know, electroding up Bradley Cooper and chatting on about how this thing works. And then I mentioned it to the kids and they're like, oh, let's make one of those. So looking into little Arduinos on how you could, or Raspberry Pis or whatever that you could use to make your own little
that's cool.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff I love. And I you know, I lose the kids a lot of the time because I'll just go down the rabbit hole with it. But at least I feel like it almost doesn't matter. It's just about letting them know that it's possible to do these things, and then they can run with it if they want to. If they don't, they don't, you know. So
that's awesome. I mean, so you very much are a teacher right now. I mean, that's pretty much what you're doing. Is this something you're doing? It's like after school, or is this like a class you're doing during the school day?
Well, it's funny. I used to just go into the school. I had like a big orange rover, as I called it, this giant cart. And I'd throw my 3D printers in the back and a bunch of robots. And I'd just wheel it into school and we'd take apart old, you know, anything. The kids would just bring stuff in and we'd, you know, if it was a Furby or a vacuum cleaner or a radio, lots of printers. Printers are great because they're sort of fun to rip apart. And there's all sorts of little motors and pumps and things, and lights and LEDs. And so that was the original idea, was just to take stuff apart. I had a kid show up on my doorstep when we were building a PC and saying, you know, your son lied. He said you were building a computer. And I was like, yeah, no, we're building a gaming computer. He goes, what? How do you do that? And I was like, well, come on down. So he came down and started playing with it. Now he's the kid I go to ask what to get when I'm looking for computer stuff, because he loves it. Like, he absolutely loves it. He just didn't know it was possible. It's just not. And again, unless you know to look that stuff up, you don't look it up. Right. So,
right.
You know, and especially if you're at school and it's like, you know, you're learning how to use Word from the 1990s, you know, computers are boring. Right. I mean, So that was kind of the inspiration for it. Was I was worried that the kids had this sort of black box mentality to stuff, where it's like, oh, the Xbox is broken, you throw it out. I was like, no, you don't. You pull it apart. You take out all the cool stuff. There's lasers in there. You know, so it's just that was that kind of approach to it that I just found was very successful. And then, you know, whenever you talk about a film with the kids, you know, they often, that for some reason that's still somewhat interesting to them. Even more so if it's a YouTuber, right? So. I go out of my way to befriend as many of these YouTubers as I possibly can, any way I can, just because that's like my in with some of the kids.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's an incredibly long-winded way of saying, We stream Tuesday. I try to stream every Tuesday at 2:30 ish, depending on how good I am at arriving on time. And we come up with a bunch of topics that I'll bring in. Some of them hit, some of them miss, but it's more about, and the kids will dual screen. So they're playing video games at the same time. I try to stop that. I go, great, you do it. Because what happens is if they're playing video games, you know, you've hit on something that's interesting when they stop and go, what's that? You know what I mean? Right. So I feel like there's no point in fighting it. I mean, so that's, and that only came about because of the pandemic. Originally I had them coming to the house, but there was a teacher strike. There was a teacher strike, so the schools wouldn't let us do it at school. So I said, okay, fine. So they can come over to our house. So poor Jane had like 15 kids running around screaming in the basement, eating fields of pizza down here and looking at gross stuff under the microscope. It's really very free. It's very much like me, very ADHD. But I found that 2:30 is a good time to start because there's some kids who, it's like this one kid who I think is in New Brunswick. So he's an hour ahead anyways. There's a bunch of kids. There's a couple of kids in London, England, and Sweden, and a whole bunch of all over America and stuff. And sometimes it's one kid. Sometimes it's just Vibe Pup, this one kid who's there every single week. And then there's other times it's 15. Who knows? I mean, you just never know. But what I love about it is that you've got the chat going on the side. So anything you want to talk about, there is some Stargate adjacent nerd who knows about the topic, and you can go, oh, really? Like, I mean, we had a friend who just came up, who was a friend I met online, and he's an ex-Navy nuclear sub guy. Like, he knows, he used to run the nuclear subs. Then he went to the NSA, so he knows a lot about hacking and computer, security stuff. And now he works at Intel. So there's like, I mean, it's just, and then ran a podcast for a while. I mean, Stargate has allowed me to connect with people that I never would have been able to connect with otherwise. And I think for me, in a weird way, it wasn't even the job. It was just this wonderful sort of entry pass it gave me to this world of knowledge that I just would not have been able to, I wouldn't even know where to knock. You know what I mean? So
the thing with computers and robotics and things like that, it's moving so rapidly. Mm. How do you keep up with the speed in which things are moving in that field?
Well, I mean, that's the funny thing is I'm not able to. I mean, I think it's one of the things we talk about with the kids is that there's so much information. Like I feel like every week it's a bit like putting your lips up to the fire hose to find out what you want to talk about with them because there's so much stuff. So I just try to grab stuff that I think is immediately either exciting or you know right away whether you've got them or not. Hmm. You say it and you're like, they'll either go like, really? And there'll be questions or they're like, uh-huh. And you're like, okay, next. You know what I mean? Like, I've stopped taking it personally at all. I've completely forgotten the question now. I've gone completely off topic.
No worries. The speed in which technology moves.
Oh yeah. So I'm not even looking to keep up. I'm just trying to find things that I think will catch their eye or that can be sort of twisted into something that might be useful to them. Like I'm really pushing right now for biotech and analytics because I think those are two fields that would be very useful to them if they have an interest in it. And also the idea that you've got these sort of pillars of education, which really irritate me because the skills that people are looking for now have got them all shoved together. Mm. The idea of being able to jump between things and go like taking the art from science and the science from art and the literature from, literature and geography. And there's just so many different mixings of these things that I feel like if you're too specific that, a computer will be doing that in no time at all. Right. I mean, you sort of want to be as human as possible. So I'm just looking for things. I don't really try to be cutting edge. I tend to be because I find it that generally is what I find fascinating. I'm just looking for things that I think will be helpful for them to inspire them potentially into things that they might not have thought about doing before, or that things might be interesting that weren't before. You know what I mean? Why talk about dinosaurs when you can talk about, dinosaur assholes? Like they found fossilized butts. You know what I mean? And the kids, of course, are right away. They're like, wait a second. What does a fossilized butt look like? You know what I mean? It's just that kind of stuff. It's so childish. But I never grew up anyways. I mean, so.
That's what works, though.
Yeah. I mean, actors are children. I mean, and I think teachers are as well.
Yes. I will tell you right now, the the amount of immaturity. My students know I'm a comic book geek. They know I'm a nerd, and they know, right. You know, my references are going to be stupid and nerdy, right. And it's whatever. Be a kid. It works. Don't get a stick up your ass. Then you're
And learn from them. I mean, that's the thing is you're much more useful to them in some cases when you're just listening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I love getting their opinion on stuff. I mean, some of it's, you know, wildly terrifying, but you know, I'm sure in your situation, I mean, if you're dealing with kids who've probably had, you know, more life experience than I've ever had, you know, that's gotta be tough too. But again, it's as long as you're not pretending to be better than them. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's like, what do you got? You know what I mean? Like, tell me, I want to know, like, that's addiction. Really? What was it? What's the, you know, how does that work? How do you fight that? What do you like? How do you stop that? What's the, you know, like, I find that stuff fascinating. I mean, you know, like I say, I really do think it is that's the pill. That's the pill we all want to take. If we can get people educated and talking, I'm not saying educated specifically in any one way of thinking, because I think the whole point is you just want to educate them enough to make their own mind up about stuff.
Well, I would agree 100%. I mean, I try to not have any pretense when I teach. You know, they know the line, but they also know, you know, I'm a goofy ass teacher, that's fine.
Right. But you do, and unfortunately, you have to be. You run at a much more disadvantage than I do. I don't have to have any out there. There's no authority to me. They can they can insult. They can do whatever the hell they want. They know there's no repercussions there at all, except my son, and even he will push it. You know, you've actually got to be a teacher. I just get to pretend to be one for a couple hours of a week.
But I will say we have no repercussions at our school either, apparently. Oh, either. Really? No, it basically, we don't have detentions. We don't have suspensions. We don't really, all they really have is the fact that I'll stand my ground and they need me to pass. That's kind of like where the only weapon in the wield.
And how does it sort of exhibit itself? Like when you have trouble with someone at school, how does that exhibit itself now?
I mean, it can go into different things. Usually it's, with these kids more like squaring up, they'll try to like, you know, cause it's like, you know, like the guy, ego thing, you know, right. You know, don't talk, you know, don't say that to me, or I don't need to do that. Why are you trying to make me do this? You kind of just stand your ground. You kind of try to be calm with it, but stern at the same time.
Right.
It's a little challenging. There's also, behaviors of, you know, leaving the room when they're not supposed to, or, or abusing the tech that they do have in class.
They can probably run circles around half that stuff, can't they?
You know, the funny thing is, like I said, when I was working at the therapeutic school, we had a couple of students, and we have one tech person who's trying to control everything, and usually the window is 48 hours. It works for 48 hours until they figure out the go around, and then we start all over again.
Yeah,
but they are so far beyond the adults in the room and in the building. That usually, like I said, you can cut it off for about 48 hours, and then they talk to each other, god damn it, and they tell each other how they did it, and they all know within 3 or 4 days what happened. It's the only benefit that you have is that because they're kids, they're, I don't say too stupid, but they're too stupid to keep their mouth shut and not brag about what they did.
Right. Oh, I see. All right. And then, so they're fessing up without even meaning to.
Right. They'll be like, oh, you know, like, they'll have some game on there that you shut off, and they'll be like, yeah, well, then why am I still playing it? Oh, well, see, it's tomorrow then. That's, I mean, it's like, guys, keep your mouth shut. You'd be a lot better at this. Turn off the volume. So funny. That'd be easier for you guys to get away with this stuff.
Well, and I don't even fight the dual screen because I there's no point to me. Like, I feel there's nothing I can say to them. So I just feel like it's like a great sign. I kind of like it because I can tell who's interested in what. You can go, okay, so that worked for him. That worked for her. That, you know,
yeah. I mean, I'm saying, unfortunately, from a teacher, for me, I can't have, if the principal walks in, they're playing games. That looks, so I gotta like, I gotta come down on that stuff. But usually my rule of thumb usually is, I teach my class. If you're not interested, whatever you do, fake it. So I don't have to get on you about it. Right. You know, so if you're going to do your doodle, if you're going to kind of drift off.
Just don't get caught.
Just have the book open, make it look like you're doing it. I was a horrible student in high school. I was horrible. I was a C student. I hated school, hated my teachers. And
I think C was like, my parents were happy when I got a C. thank God he passed.
I understand some of it can be awful and I get it. Mm. And you're not in the mood, but usually if you're not going to just fake it so I don't have to bother you, you don't have to bother me. As long as you're not disrupting, just do what you got to do and I'll teach. And what you'll find is if you do it well, you teach well and, be a little theatric, the kids that are screwing off will look up and suddenly they'll look towards you and now you've got them for a few minutes and now you got that minute, you know, do something with it.
It works. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? It is amazing. And that feeling of like when you go like, oh, my God, they're listening. Oh, crap. They're listening. Yes. Got to get this right.
Yeah, I'll say, we're kind of talking about one of the best moments I had as a teacher. This is back at the therapeutic school. We had this one student coming in because they would come in from other schools because, you know, they don't stay with us for 4 years. But he was coming in and we had a meeting and they told me this kid hates English. He will not. Don't ask him questions. Do not ask him to read. Right. Leave him alone because you don't want to deal with the problem because he blow up. And I said, whatever, I'm going to do my job. So in within 1 week, we were reading Beowulf. He was acting out the scenes of Beowulf in front of the class as summaries because he bought in. He bought into the character. I was stupid. I think I bought him in as, I called him that guy. He's that guy who always has to brag about how wonderful he is about everything and one-ups everyone with what they say. It's like, he's that guy. So you all know that guy. He's that guy.
Yeah.
And he bought in. He would go do the whole thing and act out the scene, you know, it's in summary and all that. I was like, guys, don't tell me a kid can't, you know, doesn't like English. Just, you've had bad teachers.
That's it. And that's it. It's like, that's my biggest issue is I also worry that, you know, I was like, how do we get beyond the fact of just, I hope you get a good teacher. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, why don't we know what a good teacher is? Like, why don't we know how to create that? Why don't we know how to maintain that? Why don't we know how to reward that? There was a time when teaching was the job to have. Mm. You knew your subject. Mm. And I feel like sometimes it's like, you know, people feel like they're failing into it or something. Like it doesn't make any sense to me. Well, like, I don't understand why, you know, hey, if you don't know, you teach, that kind of stuff. Like that kind of attitude, you're like, but what if you just want to teach? You know what I mean? Like,
right. Well, I'll give you one secret about teaching from what I've learned over the years. And I think I've been better that I've learned about this is that, there's a closed door thing about teaching. Hmm. Teachers don't like to admit to another teacher when they're not doing something well, or that they don't know something. So no one talks about it. Huh. So, I mean, I will say, and if you think like as an English teacher, I know all about English. Well, guess what? I don't. I know enough. I know more than they do. And I can teach and I'll screw up from time to time. I tell the students, one thing I do as I introduce myself, I have a whole thing where I go into why it's okay to be wrong, you know, and I'm wrong all the time myself. But teachers don't like talking about it. They don't like talking about, I don't know what I think I think I should know, or I didn't know how to handle this class the way I think I do. And you don't talk to each other.
Yeah.
So because you don't talk to each other, shittiness just continues because no one's willing to admit to another teacher that you missed something. They won't tell you that when they need help. And it's this weird closeted thing where no one wants to talk about what's going on.
Yeah, that's bizarre. I mean, that is also a grown-up thing too, right? Like grown-ups want to be right.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I guess that's, maybe that's just my own insecurities. I just assume I'm wrong and that's worked out pretty well for me. You know what I mean? Like it sounds silly, but I really do. Like I just assume I'm not going to get things right.
Right.
And then when it works, it's wonderful. But as a result, I don't get depressed when it doesn't, because I just assume that you've got to fail a few times anyways. Yeah. It's funny. They're saying what are the most important things for a kid to learn, for the like future skills, future proof skills is what to do with failure, because you're going to fail.
Yeah.
And everyone's going to fail. The question is, what do you do with it? Right.
No, I agree with you. Like I said, on Monday, when I start my new school and I start with the new kids, I have a PowerPoint on which says who I am. If that's what's the name of the PowerPoint, it's about me. So they understand and get comfortable with who I am.
Right.
And I literally have one whole thing where it's about being, it's okay to be wrong. And I expect you to be wrong. I tell them in the thing that expect me to be wrong, I will screw up. You'll see grammatical errors on the freaking assignments. I'm telling you, I made them. They're typos. But you know what? That's just how these things go. And you can catch them and you can tell me I screwed up. That's fine with me.
Right.
That's part of the deal. And when you're wrong in your questions, you know, so feel free to be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know. You know, I gave you the wrong answer. That's how this goes. But there's a fear, I think, when you're a teacher of what you're expected to know, and then a bit of an ego that you don't want someone to tell like your boss, your principal, oh, did you know Jeff got this answer wrong on Romeo and Juliet or whatever? You know,
he didn't even know this. Yeah.
Right. I think this whole quiet thing. So everyone just kind of acts like, no, I know everything. Everything's good. I was perfect. My class is perfect.
Right. Yeah. I guess that is it. I mean, and I understand that too. I mean, I work again, working in IT. I remember being the new kid coming in and trying stuff and everyone was always like, oh my God, don't touch that. And then I remember, one of the things that led to me going back to the world of film and television was realizing that there's a new kid had come in, and I was very nervous about what he was doing. And I was like, oh God, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy who's like, oh, don't touch anything. That's the way it is. You know what I mean? Right. Like, again, there's that, you know, you're operating at a disadvantage as an adult anyways, because you have a sense of repercussions that kids don't have. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that one thing will lead to another. Whereas at that age, you know, the brain isn't developed enough to really make a lot of those connections anyways. So they can make those mistakes and not worry about it, if that makes sense, because they don't know where it's going to lead them, you know?
Right. And I agree with you 100%. I mean, when I start with these new students on Monday, I recognize there's going to be some, we're going to lock horns a little bit for a couple of weeks, usually how it goes. And they test you and they try to figure out, you know, what the problem is. But, you know, at the end of the day, they'll assume the line is somewhere and you'll hold that line. And you try to not point out that there's no repercussions for them not to listen to you. There's literally nothing we're going to do. We're not going to hold you after. We're not going to fail you. So you also appear in the upcoming television show, Cabin of Curiosities. What drew you to that project?
Guillermo's always a pretty good draw, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Guillermo del Toro, generally, you know, I've been very, very lucky. I've worked with him a few times now. And I sort of refer to him as like the Gandalf of Hollywood. He's this kind of magical being. I worked on Shape of Water, and I remember getting the part, and I'd auditioned in England, and sent the recording in and ended up getting the part. And I was like, oh, good. Okay, good. So that's good. It's a couple of days work. That's great. You know, basically it was like sort of like a check, you know what I mean? Like, oh, that'll look good on the resume type thing, being the jaded jerk that I am. And then they called, they said, well, he wants you to come in for rehearsals. I'm like, oh, rehearsals. Like, do we have to rehearse? It's film, you know, just film it. You know, so I'm like, all right, fine. So I cycle down to the, and then I'm in for a whole week of rehearsals with all of the cast. And I'm like, oh God, this is gonna be awful. I hate actors. But I got in there, and the first thing he did, oh, David, he pulls, you know, wades me into his office, and it's, you know, it's surrounded by zombies and vampires. It's just a beautiful, you know, like this magical world unto itself. And then he goes into his desk and he shuffles around. He comes out with this little red cross. He was like, I think your character would wear this. And I can barely see it. I'm like, okay. Yeah. He goes, I found this in a market in Marrakesh, and I was thinking this would be what he was wearing in his jacket. I'm like, or maybe his tie. I'm in for 2 days. Like, what do you've thought about this? You know what I mean? but I sort of like sucked it up. And then I went into the room with all these actors doing these scenes. And I remember they were talking through a scene and then at one point he will turn to you and sort of go like, what do you think? And you're like, what does it matter? I got like two lines. What do you like? What the hell does it matter? You know? But he's just so, I mean, it's always Guillermo.
Yeah.
There's nothing that, I mean, there's no, like anything that happens in his movies is Guillermo. There's no like, and yet at the same time, you feel like you're involved in every aspect of it. And just has this amazing ability to do this, to the point where I missed, when the rehearsals were over, I was really sad. And Jane's like, well, you haven't even shot it yet. I was like, yeah, but the rehearsals are over. Like, they were so much, because I'd sit there for a day just listening to this guy. And every single scene in that movie, he had some story that related to his life or a moment in his life or a thought that he had about something. Everything was personal in that. And it was beautiful, like just beautiful. And the people he gets to work around him, he has, I think, the most important trait as a director, which is people want to work with you, you know? And that means that they want to do the best they possibly can. And so you get the best. And he's just got these amazing people who make his films with him. And, a few months later, you get a little email that says, darling, you know, would you do a day on this new thing? And you're like, okay, I guess, you know, okay, Mr. Guillermo. You know, he's just won an Oscar, and you get like a little text saying, would you do a day on the so-and-so? And then pandemic screwed that up. And as it turned out, again, pandemic working in my favor, I ended up getting a much nicer role in Nightmare, because, you know, other people weren't available. And he's like, okay, perfect, David will do that. So, I got to interrogate Bradley Cooper, you know? I mean, it was just, it's just magical. So the idea that Guillermo was involved in it first off is, and foremost, is probably, you know, but the big draw as well is that I told you about getting into acting in film at age 13, 14 years old. So the kid who came up to me and asked me to do his film, the kid, he's the same age as me. You know, he's Vincenzo Natali, he's the guy who did Cube, is the guy. So he's directing this one. So, and I was laughing because he's written this script. I mean, I guess Guillermo had a series of stories that he wanted to do, and he sent them out to a bunch of different directors, one of them being Vincenzo, because they're, you know, they're good friends as well. And, you know, again, it just one of these lucky, fortunate things that happens to me. You know, they should have got a name for this. I mean, they should have got this many famous people, I'm sure, would love to work with Guillermo and Vincenzo on a show, but because I know Vincenzo and this film is so Vincenzo, you know, Vincenzo said he'd like to have me for it. And Guillermo's like, well, who else? You know what I mean? Like, it was just, you know, there's all these, I felt so bad for all these like Netflix executives going like, oh, we could have Bradley Cooper. We could have this. And then there's Guillermo going like, yeah, no, Hewlett's perfect. You know, they're all like, oh, stupid Hewlett. But it's just, it was this wonderful, as always with Vincenzo. I know it's a bit like Guillermo as well. Vincenzo's the most Guillermo-like director I've ever worked with, if that makes sense. I think that's why I work for Guillermo, is because I feel like I've worked with a Guillermo for many years, and that's Vincenzo. But he's constructed this script that, as I said, God, you know, if I was 15 again, this would be a wonderful script to do. The fact that I'm over 50 and you're making me do the same crap is going to kill me. I still can't move my arms properly from this thing, but I want to say like an Evil Dead meets Midsommar meets a Guillermo movie. Like, it is glorious. It is ridiculous and over the top and touching. And I can't get over it. And we filmed it all in black and white, which will be interesting, because I think they're also doing a color version as well. But the idea was to do a crazy old black and white movie. And it's nuts. It's so much fun. I think the best quote we got from about it was Vincenzo's wife, Kana, is brilliant acquires films for Japan, for a company in Japan, you know, got, you know, a Blair Witch Project for like 10 bucks, saying, I think this is going to be big, that kind of stuff. She's like, she's a genius. Anyway, but she said, well, here's the thing, is because actors are all masochists. They love anything. If they're miserable, they're happy. And sure enough, this film was, you know, I was in tunnels. I had a tunnel fitting. I went and they had to build a tunnel that was only just big enough for me to be in. And then they made miles of these things that I was in for a month. You know, and then the day before we started shooting, I went, honey, am I claustrophobic? I was like, it never even occurred to me that I might actually be claustrophobic. I had a horrendous nightmare the night before we started, where I was panicking and buried alive and a lot of the things that happened in this. And I thought, oh God, I've screwed up horribly. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to get in this tunnel and I'm going to be screwed. But the reality is it's make-believe. And it's it's not necessarily comfortable, but it was extraordinary. I mean, like, I can't give too much away, but it's this wonderful sort of anthology series that he's created. It's kind of a Hitchcock Presents or a Twilight Zone type thing. So it's a number of different stories. I don't believe they're connected in any way other than Guillermo. And they're all just a chance to sort of let these directors' freak flags fly. Like, I mean, they all get to do what they do best. And some of it is truly weird. And they got these amazing, in other things, many fantastic actors and directors involved. And I can't wait to see them. I mean, like, I'm excited to see mine very much. And it's a wonderful opportunity because it's like, it's just me and a lot of horror. You know, and a few wonderful little, some supporting characters, but it's, you know, it's kind of a one man's pathetic journey, but all these, I can't wait to see all these other episodes as well, because it's really going to be, you know, I used to remember those, the old anthology series, I used to love that stuff. I mean, I understand why they don't do more of them, because they're expensive and there's no draw. You know what I mean? Like, it's like every episode you got to start all over again. Right.
Right,
you know
right.
I mean? But so the sets are just gorgeous. I mean, somebody give somebody an award for something or everything, because it was just, everything was meticulously made, and the effects are just, I mean, Guillermo and Vincenzo are big fans of practical effects. And I grew up with this stuff, like working with Vincenzo as a kid. We did lots of all sorts of zombie stuff and you know, pseudo mechanical approaches to stuff. I mean, even making Cube, there was this, you know, Cube, I think there's one digital shot in Cube because it was the only thing that we could afford. You know, and it's like, it's a joke now. I mean, but everything was, you know, practical, because one of my joys about independent film, especially genre stuff, is that you're constantly working against budget and time, and you're trying to get it to work in the camera. And it's just, it was spectacular. So, and now you got the digital element as well. So you can now improve on, you know, you can get as best as possible with practically, and then it's helped out by the digital. There's some pure digital stuff, which is gorgeous too, but you know.
Well, what I've read about it, and it, you know, there's only so much information that's out there right now, that your character's played, it's named, probably get the name wrong, Masson.
Yes.
It's based on a short story by Henry Kuttner. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know how to say his name, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. I probably got it wrong too, but if it sounded real, I'm taking it.
I bought it. I totally bought it. Yeah. You're a good teacher.
Oh, thank you. I said it with confidence, and that's what made it work.
Just say it loudly and fast. That's what I did on Stargate. Everyone thought I knew what I was talking about. It's amazing.
So did you read the short story that was based on and to prepare?
Nope. I just read the script. I don't know whether I'm lazy or whether I'm superstitious or what the deal is. I feel like there's some stuff you want to research for sure. And we talked about an accent originally, so I was looking at accents and stuff. My problem with accents is that, I love doing them, certainly in a silly way. But my concern is it's another layer between you and reality, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? You're already trying to sell the fact that things are happening to you that aren't really happening. So having an accent as well, I felt it was, so we talked about it, we decided not to do an accent, which I was a little disappointed about, because I was like, I could have done an accent, but nah, whatever. But I'm actually kind of glad I didn't, because it allowed you to be, there's so much, this is one of those scripts that there's these gorgeous long monologues, which I'm sure they've cut out, but we filmed these gorgeous long monologues. And then, so you're reading the script, you're like, oh my God, this is like a actor's dream, all these wonderful speeches, and you know, with Nail and I, like, you know, waving your arm around, and he's very sort of theatrical, this guy. And then all of a sudden that stops, and it's just pages and pages of scene direction, because there's no dialogue. It's all just things happen one after the other, and it's just it's just extraordinary. It was, I said to Vincenzo, I think it's my favorite read of his. I mean, scripts are ugly. They're boring. They don't, you know, they're not, scripts are horrible to read, because you just don't, they're not meant to be read. They're meant to be seen.
Right.
You know, unlike Shakespeare, you know, who've actually got some, they got some good things to say in there. You know, scripts are just, they're awkward. They always, and if you're in the, I feel like if you're in the wrong mood, a script's terrible, because you're like, that's stupid. No one would say that. And it's just like, because you haven't read it in your head the right way. You know what I mean?
Right.
But this was just like, this was like poetry. It was just this spectacular kind of like, and then it just culminates. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And it's just huge. Like, it's just like, it just gets worse and worse and worse. And it's, and funny. And there's always a sense of humor as well that I love. I mean, Guillermo has this as well, but Vincenzo is very big on this kind of, he goes so big with stuff in some cases. It's almost like John Woo. It's like, it goes so big that you have to laugh. And there's a few moments there where I just found myself, you know, just inside, just howling with laughter while I'm, you know, howling in pain or screaming for my soul or whatever, you know, like, so a lot of screaming, bugging my eyes, that kind of stuff, the usual usual Vincenzo Natale stuff. So I mean, yeah, it was definitely a tag team of reasons why I had to do this. One was because Vincenzo had asked me, and the other, of course, was because Guillermo's involved. So,
Well, I'd love to interview Vincenzo. So if you ever want to just give him a shout out for me as well, I would love to do that.
I can send him an email for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Cause he's, he's funny. Cause he's such a, he does all these science fiction movies, and then the only thing I can get him to use is an iPad. He's like, he's like a technophobe, sci-fi guy. Like it's hilarious. He's really one of the most brilliant. I'm so glad that he's made the jump to television, because people can see more of what he's up to. And and it really is extraordinary. He's just got this wonderful brain. He's just written a graphic novel as well. Not just written, really? He's written it and done all the art for it.
Really?
And then done all the inking and coloring himself. I mean, it's just, he wrote an album. Like I was like, if I didn't like you so much, I freaking hate you.
What was the name of the graphic novel?
I don't remember the name of it. I don't remember. I don't even know where to find it. He sent it to me on an email. Well, I can look it up for you. He's amazing. Just amazing, amazing guy. And again, as I say, like we worked together. It was him and Andre, two friends from high school. Middle school even. We hadn't even got to high school yet. And we would just spend our summers making movies. And it's just so funny. You know, we kept on sort of like, we'd stand beside each other at 5-6 monitors going and giant sets and people running around panicking and making this thing happen. And we just sort of look at each other and go like, dude, it's like being 15 again, except there's like, this is like grown-ups here.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it was just, it's just so funny being the old guys at the party now,
So
it's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
So when is Cabin of Curiosity is going to be available to, and where, do you know where it's going to be?
I think that, it's Netflix for sure. Netflix are, and thank God bless Netflix. Just that they brought in Guillermo and they're like, they're letting Guillermo do what Guillermo does, which is just weird stuff. No one wants to see Guillermo doing, like traditional stuff. Yeah. He doesn't want to, he's like, he's doing what he does. And, again, a great example of what a freaking, the Gandalf of Hollywood he is. He's brought together, instead of just saying, I want to do all the episodes myself and I'll, he brings in all these different talents. He's got he just loves this stuff. He loves filmmakers. He loves actors even, which is weird. He's brought together this crazy talented bunch of people, and Netflix has let him do it. And I think that's, it's one of the reasons why I love them. You see Roma, that kind of stuff that they've done, like they let filmmakers do their thing. And I so miss that. It allows them to do, it allows people to make a film with their own personality instead of it having to be just this freaking film by committee, which I'm so sick of now. I grew up, I love all the big blockbuster films, but I feel like now I find it hard to connect with them anymore because I feel like they've got to appeal to everybody. And you got to know, you got to have watched 5 TV shows to understand what the movie's about. And I feel like an old man now. I'm like, there is some spectacular stuff out there. We really enjoyed Moon Knight recently, actually. Baz and I were watching Moon Knight, but now we're watching Breaking Bad again.
Oh, really?
So me and my 14-year-old kid, sitting there watching cooking meth and stuff. but again, that's some brilliant television. Right? Again, a singular vision, right?
Right, right.
Like the creator of that show was just saw it through the whole way. And there was a network that was willing to support that. And I think that's the kind of stuff I love seeing coming from. Apple's doing a great job of it now. You know what I mean? Like you're just seeing stuff that you're like, what the hell?
Right.
Like, who the hell else would make this? You know what I mean? Like C is like, what the, you want to do an action show about blind people? Like what? That's going to be great. Good luck with that one. You know what I mean? And it is, it's like, it is a lot. And then by the time you get to season 3, it's like a freaking giant. It's like a blockbuster. There is more going on in season 3 than all the freaking Avengers movies put together. I couldn't get over it. I was like, what are we blowing up now? It's amazing. Or who, you know what I mean? Like,
Streaming's where it's at right now. I watched The Orville, which is so smart.
Yeah, I've gone back and started watching it. Which one?
Strange New Worlds on Star Trek.
Oh, is it the new Star Trek? I haven't done it yet.
It's insanely good. It's so well done. It works on multiple levels. It's pretty ballsy. Like the last episode they had, not today's episode, which I haven't seen yet, the last week's, it was a riff on Alien and the Alien movie, but with Star Trek. It's crazy. They're so smart.
Oh, that's good. I mean, I gotta say, I like weirdly, I don't know if I'm alone on this. I really quite like Discovery. Like I kind of enjoyed this operatic of stuff at the beginning with the Hannibal guy. And then I did sort of lose touch with it. This is my problem is I love Star Trek when it's on, but now we're in a world where it's like you can pick what you want. I think the best science fiction that I've seen that's on television right now is Rick and Morty.
That's really smart though too.
I cannot get over how smart that is and how stupid it is.
Right.
Like it's this ridiculous combination of like this like just childish, you know, scatological teenage humor.
Yeah.
What wrapped in a brilliant sci-fi, experiment. I mean, yeah. I can't get over it.
I think what's great about Rick and Morty is that under the layer of stupidity, there's this deep philosophical meaning underneath it that's right there. And you're like, how the hell do they fit that level of thought into this stupid concept?
And it's why? There. And why? Like, why would you? There's so many sort of quote unquote better ways of expressing this story. Like, what is it? I can't remember what the one was, where there was like an engine within an engine, with a world within a world within a world.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, he loves playing with those paradoxes. Like, there was another one recently we saw where they were, you know, they were decoys. They were all decoys, the family. He loves going like, let's see where we can go with this idea.
Well, there's the one on that got me, as the English teacher, on the train, where they're doing story development, but it's all done on this like moving train. I was like, if it wasn't so vulgar, I could teach it to my students. But unfortunately, they go too far over. I can't teach it to my kids because it's obviously I'd be in trouble for showing it.
Which sucks because that's exact. I mean, Shakespeare was that.
Right.
Shakespeare was that vulgar.
Which is how I teach Romeo and Juliet. There's the season there. There's a few seasons there where I tell the students, I can't tell you what it's saying, but trust me. Think about it.
Right.
And it works.
You do the Baz Luhrmann film as well? Have you shown them that at all?
We do Baz Luhrmann. Like I said, but there's like things like, I actually had a student not too long ago. There's a thing like where they bite their thumb.
Bite your thumb, sir?
Right. But what it represents. Bite your thumb. Right. Yeah. But why it's so vulgar is what it's supposed to represent. And the kids don't pick up, but be like, think about it. Thumb in your mouth like that. Just think about it for a second. And then they'll see the eyes start getting big. Like, oh shit, that's a lot in your story that you're teaching me. It's like, as long as I don't tell you what it literally means, I can teach.
Yeah. Suck my thumb. Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. It's that.
Right.
No, it's, and it was body. I mean, it was like, that's the stuff I couldn't. There was an amazing series that I watched when I was, I guess when I was just starting out. I mean, back when I was, probably 14, 15 years old, was the Royal Shakespeare Company acting Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Like all these old school British actors do it, like David Suchet and this is ridiculous. Every single person in Lord of the Rings, Picard.
Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart as well. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
All doing Shakespeare stuff, and it's this. I don't know who the guy was, but he was I guess he was the head of the Royal Shakespeare Company. So it's worth having a look. I think it's probably only available on VHS now or something, but it was the Royal Shakespeare Company. It was called Playing Shakespeare. And it has like Dame Judi Dench. Just a whole, like I have forgotten more people than there. I mean, it's extraordinary. The talent that was there doing this at the time. And they just sort of stand around and say like, well, and they would do these different speeches. And I remember for me, it just came alive. I was like, oh my God, this is like,
have you ever watched Shakespeare Uncovered?
No.
Okay. It started off as a PBS, miniseries, but it's gone for three seasons. What they have is, almost every Shakespearean, not everyone because there's so many, but a lot of the Shakespearean plays, they have usually a well-known actor narrating about the play and how it was created. There's one from Macbeth that's narrated by Ethan Hawke. So good. Show it every time I teach Macbeth. It's a genius program. And it goes really like in depth about it. They talk about the acting of it, the writing of it.
Oh, they got David Tennant on it as well.
Yeah, David Tennant does one.
Tom Hiddleston.
Brian Cox, I think, has one as well.
Oh, Brian Cox, I love. Yeah. I've been watching Succession.
I have not seen Succession.
Oh, dude. Oh, that is a gift. You're welcome.
All right, I'll check it.
Yeah, it's spectacular.
But trust me, Shakespeare Uncovered is one of the best looks at Shakespeare. And like I say, I show the Macbeth one all the time. Romeo and Juliet show sometimes as well, but it's so well done.
Oh, that's great. Okay, I will definitely look that up. It's been a while since I've brushed up on some Shakespeare. You know? We used to have to. One of the things I missed, I started to do this, and I'm afraid I let it go. But I wanted to start a website for monologues, where people just recorded monologues. That was it. So there's no distractions, none of this TikTok and Instagram stuff. The idea was that you could write monologues and you could perform monologues. That was all it was for. The idea was that when I started out as an actor, that was the only way you could audition, right? There wasn't tape.
So
you'd go into a room, you'd have a speech prepared, and you'd go and you'd do the speech. And I loved it, absolutely loved it, because you could find the most beautiful, perfect piece of, you know, writing that that spoke to you. You could, and then you'd go in and you just knew your stuff. Like, it was just like, you just knew it backwards. It would, like, you know, I remember, like, there were monologues that just, you could, you know, I could say it in my sleep, because you use them so many times in these auditions. And now, of course, you get sides from the show or whatever, which I also love too. And I still, to this day, still memorize all my lines. I can't, even if it's just, they need it the next day, I will still learn the lines, because I don't know any other way of doing it. I mean, some people can do it with the taping up the lines. I've never been able to do it. But yeah, the monologues thing was just something that I miss. I miss so much. Because as I say, I don't like being an actor, but the acting I love doing. Mm-hmm. And I always felt with the monologues, you really got to say, it was like, okay, acting on now. There you go, you know? And I thought it'd be kind of fun to sort of try to reinvent that for people, because there's, you know, there's just, or just to do scenes that, you know, do a part that you're never going to get. Like, that's the other thing about the monologues, is you could do a monologue for a role that you were never going to play, but it didn't matter. It was just to get them to have a sense of you and your mannerisms and the things you could come up with and stuff. So,
well, if you ever did that, you have one viewer who definitely will check it out.
Well, sorry, oh, really? Oh, good.
You got one. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. I was going to call it was Soliloquio. And it was going to be,
awesome.
Yeah, and it was just going to just, and I actually had people, it was funny, because you weren't the only one who liked it, because there was I think I had a few hundred people submit monologues, but I just couldn't, the time and the money it was going to take to put it together, I just didn't have I just couldn't do it, especially during the pandemic. I was like, I think I better save my money just in case we can't eat next month. So, you know, there was that, you know. Now I'm getting little messages. It's after six, so I should probably wrap up.
No worries.
I should wrap up.
Well, Mr. Hewlett, it's a total pleasure talking with you. This
David,
was fantastic.
David, please.
It was one of my best times I've had. So
good. Well, so that's just fantastic. I love geeking out about this stuff, and you're obviously a kindred spirit on this stuff. So
yes,
that's and on the educational stuff as well. It's even better. So we'll have to stay in touch. But what am I going to get you? I'm going to try to put you in touch with Vincenzo. No promises, because he's a busy man. But I will definitely get you Jane and Kate for sure.
Indeed.
And Kate's fun to talk to as well, because she's got she's got the whole Stargate side of stuff as well. So, and she will tell you the opposite of every story that I've told you, basically.
That'd be fantastic. And like I said, and hopefully come back in August, talk about
C. Yeah, fantastic. Indeed. Oh, have you talked to Jonathan Tropper?
No, I have not.
Tropper is the showrunner. And he's a geek like us.
All right.
So you never know. You might get him to talk. I'll bug him as well.
All right. I would greatly appreciate that. And
he's fun, because he did Adam Project as well. He's doing the new he's doing everything. I can't keep track. I was like, shut up. You got too much work, you know.
Well,
is his Lego as organized as mine is? Probably not.
Well, I just will say I'm probably going to release this in two parts. The first part will be Monday, so keep an eye out for Monday, and then
fantastic.
The second one will be Tuesday. And like I said, this came out better than I expected.
Oh, I'm so glad.
So well, thank you so much.
Do it again. That's fine. Fantastic. And remind me, just keep bugging me. I'm terrible. So just, you've got my email now, right? So if you need me to tweet something or something, just remind me, because I am a little ADHD. Squirrel, you know, like
You'll definitely hear from me. I guarantee it. I do not want to miss out on something to you as well. Thank
fantastic.
You so much, sir.
All right, man. And enjoy your first day.
Oh, thank you so much. I will. I'm I'm optimistic, cautiously optimistic.
Knock him dead.
Thank you so much.
Do you get nervous? Do you get nervous before you do?
I get nervous at every class. I actually have a wicked bad anxiety disorder. So before every class, it's almost like preparing for like a sport game. I get very, I get anxious. I'll get anxiety. Sometimes I'll get panic attacks that kids don't know about. They never see it. But yeah, I get it almost, I get frequently, but usually when the kids sit down, I snap in and I just kind of go for it.
Yeah.
But the nice thing is when you're—
Dude, that's acting. Same for acting for me. I'm telling you, the same.
The thing about anxiety though, nervous energy works sometimes in front of a class.
If you can harness it. Yeah. Right. If you can, that's the problem is I'm always a little nervous about it because you think like if it goes the wrong way, but it, you know, I think the more you do that stuff, I people always ask me if I'm nervous. I'm nervous before every single take. I'm a mess, but not a mess, but inside I'm like, oh, well, this is where they find out I suck at this. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you just, it's, but I think what you're doing is fantastic. I mean, you gotta be feeling good about it. I mean, that's, you know, and you've got this as well. So that's
I want to say it's nice. It's nice thing about this. It makes me feel look cooler when I go there as well. Cause they're like,
that's right.
You know, cause I'm like, oh, I'm going to bring in so-and-so to talk with the school. And they're like, who? And the cool thing is when we watched, we watched the movie Conspiracy, which was based on on the Nazi Final Solution.
Oh yeah. So
I was able to get one of the actors, Barnaby Kay I got him to come to talk to the class. So we watched the movie, then the actor comes talking about it. And when we did Macbeth, Miles Anderson, the Shakespearean actor who was in Macbeth with Denzel Washington, he came and talked to the kids. So it's like, we're watch the movie, cool. And then we're going to talk to the actor, and it makes me look badass.
And now if you get some YouTubers in there, you'll really have their attention.
I have to be like, oh, we'll find a YouTuber.
good luck. Good luck. You know, swing a cat, you'll hit like 10 of them.
You know what?
YouTubers everywhere.
Yeah, there's actually a few that I tried reaching out to. I can't remember... But I must admit, they're harder to get in touch with than the actors. The
really?
They reach at the point where they're harder to get yeses from to talk to than actors. Like, I think because they do YouTube too, they're like competitors. Like
there's also, and I think honestly, I can only imagine how much email they're getting. I mean, I have a hard time getting through my email. I can only imagine what someone who's like internet famous. I mean, like Jesus, that's gotta be. And also they don't have people. Like that's the great thing about I got my agent who's luckily also a big geek as well. I think he's my agent because he has better Lego than I do. That's the sign of a good agent. All right, I gotta go.
All right, have a great night, sir.
Thank you so much, man. It was good luck with it. And,